Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
From Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, this is What's Next, an hour dedicated to amplifying the voices of marginalized and underrepresented communities across Western New York and Southern Ontario.
We cannot erase, we cannot reform, we cannot make things better if we're uncomfortable having tough conversations,
Absolutely.
If we're uncomfortable
Absolutely.
Talking about race.
What's Next carries forward our mission to engage in meaningful conversations about race, equity, and the shared concerns that deeply affect Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
Don't stop. Make those families part of your life. Their lives are part of yours. Don't stop.
Together, we dive into the real issues, striving for understanding, connection, and change.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
And good morning. Welcome to What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media NPR. I'm Jay Moran, very pleased to be with you and here to talk about, I think, one of the key elements of our community, and this is our students in the Buffalo Public School student system. With us, members of the Buffalo Solutions Not Suspensions Coalition. With us from the NYCLU, the Buffalo organizer, Emmanuel Radford. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning.
Also from the University of Buffalo Law School, Professor Kim Diana Connolly. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, it's great to be here.
And a very familiar voice our public media listeners, and that's Sam Radford III. Sam, of course, like we said, from the Western New York Equity Task Force and also the Buffalo Solutions Not Suspensions Coalition. Good to have you back, Sam.
Hey, good to be back, Jay.
Well, before we get into student suspensions here in the city of Buffalo, let's talk about the prison, the suspension to prison pipeline. Now, this is something that I think it's always worth talking about, and let's get into the facts of this. What happens for kids who get suspended in school, in Buffalo schools or whatever school? What happens to them? What is their likelihood?
Oh, that's a good question. You're talking in terms of the schools to prison pipeline.
Yeah, school to prison pipeline.
So what does the data say?
Yeah.
Is that, you know, the more a kid is suspended, the more likely that a kid will drop out of school. And if the kid drops out of school, the more likely they will end up, you know, involved with the legal system one way or the other.
And the data from where you sit and maybe the anecdotal data, if I'm maybe mixing my terms a little bit there, irrefutable. This is a reality.
Yes, this is absolutely a reality shown by the scholars, and it's alarming and it's preventable. We have the name of our coalition. There are solutions other than suspension to get kids back into harmony, to get kids back and keep them in the learning environment. And they are used lots of places around the country. They're not perfect. It's hard to run a school. We understand
sure.
that. But there's ways to really make a difference for the community.
Yeah, I think it's interesting also if you talk to people who work in reentry programs or people who work directly in the prisons, one of the first things they tell you is that majority of those young men or women that come into the system are illiterate, they can't read or have struggled in school, which is a direct sign of the suspensions of them not spending time in school. So talking directly to people who work in that field, they say the same thing. That's children who drop out, who can't read or who can't write, who can't, you know, operate within a building, they end up with them and then they still have to spend time trying to teach them how to read, trying to get them the help that they need. So, yeah, I think it's irrefutable. I don't think anybody will say different.
And I'm just curious of your own experience, Emmanuel. You graduated from Hutch Tech.
Yes.
Of course, one of the better schools in the system, for
sure. It was.
Sure. Yeah.
It was.
No doubt. But at the same
Tech
time,
high.
I'm just kind of curious did you see peers, whether they're at Hutch Tech or maybe neighborhood kids or whatever the case may be, who fell into this reality?
Yeah, I tell people all the time, I was privileged to have parents who were very engaged in my education, and I've seen that a lot of the times the difference that was made in school was the fact that my parents were on top of me and that there wasn't a lot of times the school district could take advantage or illegally do anything to me as it relates to suspensions or anything like that, because my parents were on top of it. And so one of the things that actually got me into organizing work was the fact that a lot of students suffered from, you know, suspensions or suffered from being taken advantage of by the system, because a lot of people don't know how to fight against the system. Most parents think that if a suspension letter comes home, that it, then it is what it is. Most parents think that if the principal says that, that the principal is law and that they can't appeal, they can't go to the Board of Education, they can't go to the State Education Department. So that really is what got me back into the work, because a lot of people within the system are taken advantage of by the system. And I was a, you know, privileged to not have that done to me. And so, you know, that I wanted to be able to give that back to young people, to say, you know, just because the principal says you're suspended does not mean you're suspended.
All right. So let's get into now what's going on in the school district. We've been hearing about the suspension issue now for a couple of years. It's been highlighted for sure, but we're not seeing change. Is that basically what we understand right now?
Well, let me kind of just kind of center this around what brings us here today.
Sure.
On June 11th, 2010, I want to introduce everybody to Miss Jenny Joyner. Jenny Joyner is a parent. I always remember Miss Joyner. She has five children. Four of her children are two sets of twins that are born in the same calendar year, January and November. So it was really easy to remember Miss Joyner, right? And she has one son. Her son is Jawan Daniels. And if you could put yourself in her shoes, she sent her son out to school on the morning of June 11th, you know, hoping that he would come home that day. Jawan Daniels was at school. He got caught in a hall sweep.
Just let's make sure, a hall sweep. What hall sweep is?
Yeah. Other words, you shouldn't be out of the classroom once the bell rings.
Gotcha.
And so if you out of the classroom once the bell ring, that's the hall sweep. In this particular case, Jawan Daniels had went in the classroom and got a pass, and he was out during the hall sweep, but he had a pass.
Okay.
But the security did not want to hear that. He was out there, and he just got put in with everybody else, and he was suspended. The district policy is that if they suspend you, that they have to call your parent to tell your parents you're suspended, or and they come pick you up, or you get on the bus with the parents' permission to come on home. So they didn't do that. They just sent Jawan Daniels home. And Jawan, when he went to the bus stop, he went to Lafayette High School on the corner of Grant Street. He was shot and killed, shot twice and killed. He didn't make it home that day. Our concern is that the district violated his own policy and put him at risk by putting him out of the school that day. And they continue to violate their own policy today, putting their students at risk. So way back then, we started to mobilize and organize. As a matter of fact, the Erie County Restorative Justice Coalition started in 2010 because of the murder of Jawan Daniels. So we're here today because we began a fight at that particular time to change the idea around suspension. Instead of having a punitive model of suspension, we mobilized to have a more restorative model of suspension. So you would get to the bottom of why he was in the hallway.
Sure.
You would seek to solve that problem. And we came up with a really great policy, a model policy, as a matter of fact. And we found that, you know, policy does not necessarily mean change, system change. So we learned that when you have a policy, then you got to have a regulation. Then when you have a regulation, you got to have somebody who's monitoring the regulation. They got to be somebody's job to evaluate whether that regulation is being implemented with fidelity or not. And so what we found over the last 15 years is that the school district has not solved the suspension problem. They continue to violate their own policy like they did in 2010. And we're here today because we want to see that change. There's an opportunity to change that because in 2020, the Office of the Attorney General started an investigation into the Buffalo Public School District, investigating their suspensions. And as part of that investigation, they started working on something called an assurance of discontinuance. And so what we're here today for is to implore the Office of the Attorney General to move forward with the assurance of discontinuance as a way to hold the district accountable to following its own policy.
And this assurance of discontinuation, this is something that has been done in other districts, right?
Yes, absolutely. It's been done in Syracuse. It was done quite quickly in Syracuse. You can talk more about that.
Yeah, so the Attorney General came into Syracuse because of similar things, right? Mm-hmm. There were many complaints by parents that the suspensions that were happening in Syracuse were illegal and that they were racially motivated. And so the Attorney General came in October of 2013 and did an investigation. In June of 2014, literally 8-9 months later, Syracuse enters into agreement to change their policy, right? The assurance of discontinuance is really just saying that we are telling the Attorney General we're going to discontinue the practices that we have in place and put in new practices to try to change the culture of what's going on in the district. And so Syracuse does that. And I had the stats. Some I'm gonna pull them up, but the biggest stat that's most important is that 50% they slashed their suspensions in half, right? Just by changing their policy,
just by changing the policy,
and by having the Attorney General as the oversight of the change of the policy, which again is why we're talking, right? And just to amplify, the reason why the Jawan Daniels story is so important is that what you see is that most times when something like that happens, people put out counter narratives or they try to talk about whether the student was a bad, you know, all that right, type of stuff. Right. Jawan Daniels was innocent. Jawan Daniels wasn't a bad student. He had no prior anything. He literally got caught in the wrong place at the wrong time and adults made a decision for him. Now he ends up at the bus stop and the guy who shot at him because he was standing amongst another group of kids who had beat him up months earlier. Mm. So now Jawan Daniels is actually shot in the back twice, running away from something he shouldn't have been put in because adults made a decision for him that went against their own policy. And so now what we're saying is that the district has proven that they can't monitor themselves because they keep saying the policy, they keep saying the policy is good and we have a model policy. But if it's not implemented with fidelity, if it's not implemented on a building level, then we see that it hasn't changed. And that's why the AOD is so important, because now you put into writing with the Attorney General that we're going to change our practices and we're going to agree to be monitored in the change of them.
And just to clarify and to simplify, you're not here to talk about asking or requesting the school district to implement this policy that has been in place for some time now. You're saying they can't do it.
They've had a chance.
They've had a chance.
And they keep trying. So I think that one of the things that happened is there was a communication with the Attorney General. The Attorney General has begun its investigation. The members of the coalition were also gathering data and have been active in this a long time. So one of the things that happened as this investigation is happening, there was a white paper that was put out. We call it a white paper. It was a research paper, which people can find online, mm-hmm. On the NYCLU website, the New York Civil Liberties Union website. It's called Suspension in Buffalo Public Schools: History, Analysis, and a Holistic Positive Path Forward. So that was put out in 2022, kind of explaining here's what's going on with some recommendations that kind of paralleled discussions that were happening. And we're saying these are some ideas and many meetings with the school district, many attempts to try and say, we know your job is hard. We bring together parents, community leaders, organizations that care, students themselves come in and want to talk about how to make this work and continue to do that. And over the next 2 years, a little bit of progress is made. We're not going to say that nothing's made.
Okay. A little bit.
A little bit. But then we did put out an additional paper over 2 years later, called Update to Suspension in sure. Public Schools. And I was part of that second paper.
Okay.
Where we have the additional data showing that we are still way behind. And this is why this AOD is a really good solution. You've got experts coming in to talk with people who are doing this on the ground, kind of working with them, coming up with something. And if you look at the AOD from Syracuse, or you look at any other assurance of discontinuance, it's a document that's negotiated and signed. So the head of the school district signs it, and the Attorney General signs it, and
so it's
then
not a one size
it.
Fits all.
It's not a one size. It is negotiated with specifics to the particular ecosystem. I'm an environmental lawyer too, so when I talk about it, it's like you know that the Syracuse school system is different than the Buffalo school system. So they're not going to come in and just slap that on. They're going to come in and they're going to say, well, here's what's happened in your history and here's what you've tried. And here's, so you come up with a plan and you agree on a plan and you go forward with that. And Syracuse did it in less than a year. This has now been going on for a very long time. And Buffalo's complicated, but we think that it's time. And so we look at the data of what's really happening, and it's really needed. It's going to make a huge difference if there can be something. And one of the things that I do want to note, as somebody who's who's a former board member of the Erie County Restorative Justice Coalition, and I practice and teach in restorative justice, is restorative practices can change lives. Restorative practices have been shown for decades to be perfect for, if they're well implemented, for changing the activities within a school in a way that's going to be allowing the school to continue doing what it needs to do, which is have rules and follow them, and allowing the students to be human. So really working on, and that's one of the things that's really not been well done, except in a few schools where there's been a couple of people who've really implemented. So there are like examples.
Do we want to give those examples? I mean, is that worthwhile, or do we want to?
We can move on, but okay. I mean, I think that there are. I don't want to call out any particular schools in this.
Okay,
particular
that's fine.
Conversation.
I appreciate it. But you knew that you brought up a term, ecosystem. And it's a great term, because when you think of the Buffalo Public Schools, there are a lot of factions involved, right? There's so many different elements involved here. Let's have a little conversation about that ecosystem. I know, Sam, I think you spend more time in school than I did when I was in high school. But let's talk about what we see in the system. And I think a great example you brought up there, Kim, is that, you know, the idea that every school, every building sounds like it's different. Right? I mean, and that we're not all on the same page. Is that right?
Yeah, that's absolutely the case. Mm-hmm. I mean, and so part of what's important about the work that we're doing now is that we're looking to be part of a solution. So when you look at what was done with the white paper, you had people come together looking at the nuances of what's going on in different schools and different buildings. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, the obvious answers here in Buffalo is that, you know, you see implementation at City Honors is very different than implementation at Riverside.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? You know, it's not the same situation, same circumstances. But at the end of the day, these are all of our students, and a restorative process is a much more effective way of creating a culture that will help all students get the education they deserve. The mission of the school district is putting children and families first to ensure a high academic achievement for all. And we have not achieved that mission because all these different stakeholders have to be brought together in the interest of students, as opposed to being preoccupied, you know, with their own interests that don't necessarily get us to a place where we have a culture that restores children, ensure every child can read, write, and do math on grade level, ensure every child graduates college and career ready. And so what we're looking at is being proactive in the effort to get there. You know what I'm saying? The suspension is a reactive process. It does not necessarily get to the root of the problem. It does not necessarily solve the problem. You just kind of, you know, put the student out of school, you know, because they're suspended. You don't actually do anything to the student while they're out of school. You know what I'm saying? Right. They just suspended, you know, mm-hmm. and then they come back. You know what I'm saying? You know, and so what we want to do is make sure that we make this school district better by bringing all the stakeholders into the conversation. No matter what school you go to, you be part of the process with coming up with solutions that, you know, lead to, you know, students being whole, as opposed to, you know, end up in a situation where students are pushed out.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, no, sorry. Go ahead.
So I just want, before we go into some of the recommendations, because we have a lot of recommendations, I'd like to just share just a little bit of the data. And I would encourage people to go look at both of the papers, especially the current. So I'm just going to just share a little bit of the data on what's really happening. And some of it is that the inequity, and some of it is just the reality.
Mm-hmm.
So unlawful suspensions that actually are not part of what should be happening under the actual rules for the school districts, students sent home with no paperwork, with no due process, with no parental notice. They are happening every week. We have data. That's the truth of it. We not just have anecdotal stories of people we've talked with. We've done freedom of information law requests that this data is comes from. And so we've got all of these. And we our data show that one in five of the suspensions that happen in the Buffalo Public School System are infractions that aren't even suspendable under the district zone code. 20%.
Wow.
And then the inequities. Black students, who make up 42% of the district, they receive 64% of the short-term suspensions. And there's a lot of other things that are happening. Black students with disabilities are more than six times more likely to be long-term suspended compared with their white peers. Black students with disabilities pre-kindergarten through third grade, they make up 28% of the long-term suspensions.
Kids in third grade or
younger. Or less.
Pre-K to third grade.
Wow.
Which, by the way, New York state law doesn't want people in third grade and under suspended. They want to figure out another way. So that's like just out of keeping with New York law.
Right. That's
so
the recommendation of the state education department that you don't suspend pre-K to third grade.
Right. So we're just in this space of, we've got all this data. I could go on and on about that. I'm not going to, I'm a professor. I can talk about data for a long time and give you footnotes.
And we can listen.
That's what I'm, but I just want to say that what we're going to be talking about recommendations, but the recommendations are based on digging in with a series of experts who aren't just lawyers, but who are statisticians who've gone in and looked at all the data that we've gotten through the access that we get through our Freedom of Information laws to see what's going on and to see what's actually happening on the ground when we've got schools that are faced with the reality. We're not saying that, again, we are not saying it's not hard to be the people running these schools, but it's important that we all work together to not just use suspensions as the way that we're going to handle it.
It's also important to say, Jay, real quickly, I know I meant, is that, you know, when we first started this fight, it was parents fighting the fight, right?
Right.
But what's happened is other groups like the, you know, UB Law School, New York Civil Liberties Union, West New York Law Center, you know, Community Health Worker, Erie County Restorative Justice Coalition, a lot of groups have come in and seen what was going on, and they joined in the battle because it's so egregious. I mean, so we now have a solutions hotline, I'm saying, that, you know that been put together so we can get the data. So we're not just having an emotional reaction of what's going on. This is what the data is saying, the research is saying, and we've got credible institutions who are looking at this saying that this has to change. And so now it's the parent and a whole coalition of people who are, you know, validating the concerns we've had all along.
I was just going to amplify that. I think what we see now is that when you take the anecdotal data and the empirical data and you combine them, we're really talking about a culture. We're talking about a culture within a district that allows for City Honors and Riverside to have two different implementations within the building, right? And what we're really talking about is that, I mean, of course, each building is going to have a different subset of the culture, right? You know, a City Honors is not going to be the same as Riverside, but all the students should be treated the same and treated fairly and equally. So if I can't get suspended at City Honors for a hall sweep, I shouldn't get suspended at Riverside for a hall sweep. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about changing this culture where a building level principal gets to operate with so much power that it now becomes unfair, and they get to do things that goes against their own code of conduct. And then when a parent comes in and says, wait, you know, you're suspending my child for a level one or level two offense. How is that possible? Well, you know, that's the culture of this building, right? I've had, you know, principals look me in my face and say, well, the culture of this building is that we have a zero tolerance policy. So if a child get caught in the hall sweep, they're getting suspended. And I'll go back and say, well, that goes against your code of conduct. And they're like, well, that's how I'm running my building. And that's the culture we have to fight against. The culture where a building level principal gets to have that much power over suspending a child when it goes against their code of conduct, which is why the AOD is so important, because it allows us to now say this is going to be the culture for the district, right? The district is going to operate under this culture with these practices, and if you don't, there's going to be a consequence. Now the building level principal, before they suspend that kid, they have to think, is this legal, right? Am I going to get a consequence for suspending the kid for a hall sweep when I know it goes against my code of conduct? And that's the culture we have to change. That's the culture we have
and
to look
at. And the short answer is that if you're looking at 20% overcharges, you're getting these suspensions overturned, what happens to the person who overcharged them? what happens? And there's no consequence to, you know, when you go back and look at appeals being overturned. We don't see a corrective action plan put in place. We don't see a supervision coming in saying, okay, let me get some training in and make sure you understand how to more effectively implement the code of conduct. We just kind of get business as usual and going on to the next day. And so what we want is a little bit more teeth so we can get to systemic change, we can get to culture change, and we understand that this is just one step, the next step in the process. Because even after the AOD comes in place, then you got to monitor that, you know, for the next 2 or 3 years, you know what I'm saying, maybe 4 or 5 years, and then see if the culture changes from that, because it may not change. Mm-hmm. The hope is that it will, right? So our work is, this is just the next phase of work that we started in 2010. And so, you know, for the foreseeable, this is work that's, it may take to 2030 to get done, but if we get this AOD, it'll give us leverage that now holds the district accountable to where there are consequences coming from a source that has the power to enforce those consequences if they violate their own rules.
And let me also say, just to back up for the listeners. So when you're, there's two levels of suspension. There's something that's called short-term suspension, mm-hmm. which is 5 days or less, which parents are supposed to be notified, and there's supposed to be an opportunity mm-hmm. to get counseling and maybe get the child back in more quickly.
It's called a parent conference in lieu of a suspension. So when you first get a suspension, you don't necessarily get a suspension. You can actually, you know, come in and meet with the principal, and you can have an informal conference and prevent a suspension. Come up with alternatives to suspension.
Mm-hmm. And that doesn't happen all that often. Yeah. And so part of what my students have done is the students in the clinical program at the University at Buffalo School of Law have written appeal letters. Mm. And so you write an appeal letter having done this, which is very disruptive. The child has to explain it. You have to explain the parent. We have to get affidavits. You have to submit all this appeal. And then you submit the appeal. And we've waited months for answers on that. And so we've got this thing, and we've gotten things expunged from the record, but that can take forever for even these short-term appeals. And that can be very disruptive on many levels. Absolutely. To students. And then if it's more than five, it's a long-term suspension, and then you go into a hearing. Mm-hmm. And so the hearings are scheduled quickly, and the hearings have to show up in person. The parent has to take the time off. They have to go downtown. And oftentimes the parents are not informed. They can have an advocate there. Yes. They can have somebody do it. And I'm telling you, I've been in hearings when if I hadn't been there, that student would have been out for 20 or 30 days. Mm-hmm. But there's evidence that they didn't even know how to spend. These hearings feel like court. You raise your hand, you swear things. It's like getting them. It's again, the school to prison pipeline. Mm-hmm. You're getting them ready to be in hearings. And so these are scary hearings. These are hearings that people are doing on their own with no coaching. And some of the things that the Syracuse AOD did was addressed these types of things. And again, we don't know what would be the best thing for Buffalo, but we know what's happening right now with both the short term and the long term suspensions is not equitable or fair to students and families.
Let's use this moment to take a time out and come take a little break, and we'll come back with more on what's next. We're talking about student suspensions in the city of Buffalo. We've got some pleas to try to make change and some definite ideas of how to go about doing that. We'll get into some of those as well with us, Sam Radford, Kim Diana Connolly, and also Emmanuel Radford. This is What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Corey here with the Compact Civics Expansion Pack.
America is such a big, wide, awesome place, and to be able to see things that are representative of so many different places can be so important when brought to your tiny town.
Everybody is so kind and loving. I'm here in Buffalo just because of State Buffalo.
From urban farms to rural fairs, we'll celebrate spaces that bring us together and create community.
Watch on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel.
Hear Hear Live Music in Buffalo, New York is your guide through the melodic pulse of the city. Get a VIP behind-the-scenes look at the broad collective of vibrant festivals, historic venues, and mind-blowing artists that take the main stage and make Buffalo, New York the music destination it is. Listen to Hear Hear, hosted by Bentley on Thursdays at 11:30 a.m. and Saturdays at 6:30 p.m. on 88.7 BTPM NPR.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the BTPM Listen app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@btpm.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
We are talking about Buffalo Public Schools. We're talking about students. We're talking about suspension. I think these are conversations that most certainly need to be had. This is What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR. My name is Jay Moran. With me from the Buffalo Solutions Not Suspensions Coalition, we've got from the New York Civil Liberties Union, Emmanuel Radford. Samuel Radford is with us as well. And also from the UB Law School, Professor Kim Diana Connolly. I'm going to take a moment here, and I don't want to diverge off of what we've gotten into, because I think people have been listening. There's a lot of meat that needs to be discussed here. But inside the school district and what has been a part of the local media now for a few weeks, these comments made by Detective High on a podcast. I talked to one member of who's interested in this and said they had lots of things to say, but didn't want to go on record about this. But I'm just curious what he said about this idea that there are things happening, criminal activity that are happening inside schools, not getting reported or not being carried out to the fullest extent. And I'm just wondering, from what you see when you're focused on the student suspensions and we're talking about culture inside the districts, does this ring true? Do you see a connection in any way of what the detective had to say about that?
Yeah, let me connect it to something that Kim Diana was just talking about. She's talking about these hearings, for example, okay, where you have in the hearing, you have a hearing officer who is also an employee of Buffalo Public School District. You know what I'm saying? And so you have these situations where you now have these decisions overturned. You know what I'm saying? The reason why I'm lifting that up is because when I was the district parent coordinating council president, we had a situation where a parent came to us because she said her son was sexually assaulted on the bus. And, you know, as parents, we mobilized and we asked for an investigation. They investigated it and they came back and said, we looked at the videotape. There was no sexual assault on the bus. And so the parent came back another 2 weeks later and said it happened again. And so, you know, she finally came a third time and, you know, this is a first grader. Her son's a first grader. And they led us to believe that they've done everything that they can. They've investigated it. These things just simply did not happen. Finally, a competent investigator came, a detective from the Buffalo Police Department came and investigated. And what he did is he went and looked at all the tape. He didn't just look at the date that the child said it happened. He looked at all the tape, you know what I'm saying, to try to find out. Because sometimes when a child's traumatized, the details of when and where and all that kind of stuff get fuzzy. And what he found is not only was the child sexually assaulted, the child had been sexually assaulted 5 times. And so for me, independent of the messenger here, sure, about the investigation, I know from experience that you don't necessarily have people who are qualified to do that. You know what I'm saying? You know, so are people independent arbiters when they listen to the hearing of a suspension? Are people qualified to do certain types of investigations? I know that as a school district, you know, we could do better. People are in positions and sometimes they're in positions and they want to protect, you know, like, for example, this same thing happens in suspensions where a principal will say to a parent, come pick up your child, mm-hmm, and listen, you don't want that suspension on a record. So if you just keep your child home for 3 days, you know what I'm saying, we won't suspend it. We won't put the suspension on a record, which is illegal. You know what I'm saying? You cannot do that because that's just a way to cover up the fact that you're suspending the child. Mm-hmm. So do those things happen? Absolutely. And so our concern is more around what's the impact on students, and making sure that we're doing proper investigations with qualified people to make sure that we're making the changes we need to so that we know the children are not at risk.
Yeah, and just to amplify that, something that Kim Diana talked about too, when you walk into these hearings, right, it's really like court, right? You present evidence, you call witnesses,
yep.
It's a whole procedure. But a lot of, oftentimes you see is that the reason why that child got suspended, the district often cannot produce the evidence to actually justify the suspension, right? I've been in hearings a couple of times where when the evidence was brought up and it was just questioned by just a competent person who understands how it works, it goes away very fast. And then you end up at the end of the hearing saying, well, this child shouldn't have been suspended, but it's already been seven, sometimes five, six, 7 days. And now the child's already served it, but now we've gotten to the end and realized that that child actually didn't deserve a suspension. So there is sometimes, a culture of if the parent don't know better or if the person don't know better, they will take advantage of that, right? Which is oftentimes when the advocate or a lawyer walks into the room with a parent, the district is often like, oh, okay. Like, it's we got to deal with this differently. We got to approach this differently because we have somebody on the other side who knows the law just as well as we do. So that does happen a lot of times. And what you see is that there's no remorse from the district side of saying, well, we did over suspend this kid. How do we change this going forward? And that kind of gets back to the culture we're talking about.
And counselor, I'd have to think when you hear that, it's got to be troubling, obviously.
It is troubling. Yeah. It is troubling. And again, I do want to acknowledge that it's hard to be the Buffalo Public School System. I am not saying that we're not asking them to do more when they're already doing a lot. But I am saying, similar to Emmanuel, I've sat in these hearings where there's been evidence, there's been something called evidence presented that is not the whole story. And literally, the person, if the parent and the child were there alone, they would have no idea that they could present their own cell phone testimony, their own cell phone recording of something that happened that counteracts it. And so there's no preparation. It's highly inequitable. It's highly and it's also an investment by the school in creating a space where they're going to have their numbers are not going to be as good. They're going to have fewer students graduating. They're going to have fewer students succeed. And so it's like this is them dealing with a problem of things that they call disrespect that probably with restorative practices they could get better, and then they could have their numbers be higher as well.
And the other part of it is, when you get suspended, even if you get it expunged later, you know what I'm saying? You've already served a suspension.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So the district, they live with the fact that they oversuspend or they overcharge. They live with the fact that, okay, well, we got that wrong, because they already got the result of having a child out of the school. So who pays the price for that? The district don't get a consequence for having overcharges or suspension. The child pays the price for that. The child is not in school. The child's not getting the proper instruction they're supposed to get. And then those things compound. And so what we have to do is, our hope is the district who in terms of lip service, they talk about wanting to be a restorative district. They talk about, implementing restorative practices. And so what we want to do is see that get more effective. We want to see that be done with a fidelity, and we want to see it come, the data begin to show that the culture is changing and the suspension is going down. And we believe the assurance of discontinuance by the Attorney General office can take us a significant step there in getting that systemic change.
And do you see, do you have sympathetic voices on the Board of Education? Sympathetic ears, I should say.
Yeah, I mean, we're working on a model policy right now, and we got some board members working with us, particularly working on eliminating the pre-K to 3 suspension. Obviously, that's a recommendation from the State Education Department. That's not just us saying it. The State Education Department saying we shouldn't be suspending pre-K through third graders, and so hopefully we'll see that happen soon. I think that the board is responsible, but again, the issue is not just the policy is good already. That's the board's job. The board's job is to develop policy. At the end of the day, it's the superintendent and her staff's jobs to implement the policy with fidelity and then to monitor its effectiveness of its implemented. And the data just simply shows that that's not being done effectively right now.
I also want to tell one story about one hearing and give you another piece of data To start with, low-income students have been shown by the data to be suspended at three times the rate of their non-low-income peers for short-term and five times the rate of their non-low-income peers in the long-term. I was going into a hearing with a high schooler who had aspirations for college and who was sitting there in tears saying, this is unfair. This didn't happen the way they said it happened. And I don't think I'm going to get into college now. And we got in the room and got it dismissed. Mm-hmm. What if I hadn't been there?
Which is the case
for most
students.
Yes.
And Sam White, the Legal Center, was here previously, and I'm pretty sure she said this on record, that in some cases children are advised by the system, whoever it might be, they don't need representation.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the system protecting itself, right? It's this culture of, you know, take the consequence, because somehow if you take this consequence, you're going to be better, right? So you don't need to go get an advocate. You don't need to go get legal representation, because you deserve the punishment that we're doling out, which is absolutely crazy. I've talked to parents all the time who've said, the district, the principal, I've said, don't call anybody, just come in and we'll handle it, right? Mm. And I'm always like, no, you have the right, the legal right, right, to bring anybody who you feel can advocate on your behalf, whether that's a lawyer, whether that's a parent advocate, whether that's a community partner, whoever that may be, you have the right. And I often tell parents, if you can't get somebody in there to help you, reschedule. Don't go in there just to suffice the district at a disadvantage.
You could see, anecdotally, you could see a principal saying, oh, this is all going to work out, right? But back to the legal end of this, that doesn't always turn out to be the case.
And it's an interesting history. I mean, I've been in the district now long enough to know what it looked like before this, before we had the suspension problem. So if you go back to the late 90s, early 2000s, the district used to have the Buffalo Federation of Neighborhood Centers, who used to have representative for every parent that went there, had a representative go with them.
Wow.
And so when they negotiated a new contract, they had to cut things and, you know, having this advocacy group. And then you didn't get sent home for suspension. You got sent to a community-based group like CAO, or Urban League, one of these groups, where you will go there for suspension and they would deal with the issue that led you to suspension, make sure you got your schoolwork done. So we had this whole infrastructure in place that, because of the cost, you know, we had to pay the teacher's contract after the new contract, and they had something that they cut, and they cut that out. And so now parents don't have representation. You know what I'm saying? But now we have the blessing of having, you know, volunteers, you know, coming in between the law school and NYCLU and West New York Law Center, who are offering their services. And you would think, you know, the district would, you know, embrace that, you know, in a lot of ways, but that's not really what's happening. And so we do need to get back to a place where every child is represented in every hearing. We think that'll get us a long way to reducing these suspensions.
Let's take one more time out. We'll come back. We'll take a look at some of the recommendations and make sure we kind of hammer home some of the really important issues that have been brought to light today on What's Next. We appreciate being with us, members of the Buffalo Solutions Not Suspensions Coalition, Kim Diana Connolly of the University of Buffalo Law School, Sam Radford III, and Emmanuel Radford with us. This is What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Buffalo Toronto Public Media produced a short documentary on creative restorations, which delivers life-saving supplies to combat overdose in Western New York.
Because we're a new agency, what happens sometimes is, you know, a lot of grant funders, they are hesitant to fund you. So we were on the fence with getting the grant before I sent them the video. It was able to show the grant funder what exactly their money was going to go towards. With that grant, that allowed us to secure a home base. Now we have a location where we do community meals, where we provide services right then and there. So I think the importance is you guys were able to really put boots on the ground with us, really show the city in a lens that you don't commonly see. So I think it helps to raise awareness to some of the issues that we have in our city, but also what else left do we have to do as a community to better our community? Please, if you can, fund public media. Make sure that they're available, because they really put a harder focus on the community, and it really gives a better view of what we really need to get done here.
Contact Congress now at protectmypublicmedia.org.
What do classical symphonies, in-depth news, dramas, DIY, and your favorite indie bands have in common? They're all part of Buffalo Toronto Public Media. we've updated our station names to reflect the big picture. BTPM PBS, BTPM NPR, BTPM Classical, BTPM The Bridge, BTPM Create, and BTPM PBS Kids. Different formats, one mission. To serve our cross-border community. Learn more at btpm.org.
From the fringes of the mainstream to the local music you love. Listen to Buffalo Toronto Public Media The Bridge Monday through Thursday, 8 p.m. to midnight on BTPM NPR at 88.7 or from your smart speaker.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the BTPM Listen app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@btpm.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Coming down to our final segment on What's Next with the Buffalo Solutions Not Suspension Coalition. And just to put this out there, Michael Loss, our associate producer, we're going to task you with connecting to this posting on our website, the white papers that you were talking about, Kim Diana.
So we've got two white papers that have been put out, and I also will give you a link to the sample of the AOD that came out of Syracuse.
All right. So we'll have that available. That'll be on our website at btpm.org/NPR. All right. Let's get a little into recommendations. We've talked about asking the Attorney General or maybe insisting the Attorney General finally make some key steps here. But let's get within what that might look like. What are we talking about? How could things change? What is possible here?
So what's in examples of what's in the white paper and what's in Syracuse's AOD?
So let me go back here. So we've got a lot of recommendations. We've got a lot of recommendations that are really specific to due process and to make sure that we've already talked about representation, but also to make sure that there's due process, that we eliminate the disciplinary for the under third grade,
right?
But that we also go forward with cut. There's also some recommendations. The education department recommends a suspension capped at 20 school days. Buffalo does longer than that. So we've got some other recommendations. I don't want to get into. There's like pages of recommendations,
sure.
But we've got things that are going to be more that are going to involve more due process. We've got prevention and diversion. So we've got making sure that we seek to prevent these activities from happening. And if there is some sort of thing that is perceived as misconduct, that there is an attempt to have the parents come in and have a conversation and figure out through restorative or therapeutic practices whether or not we can do something other than suspension to get the child back into the relationship where they can be learning and doing and being a good part of the school community. Supporting student wellness and mental, emotional, and behavioral health. That is something that I know many schools have been trying to do it,
right.
That the district has been trying to do it, but really leaning into that and a long list of things to try and do that, including connecting with the people who are part of our coalition, including bringing the voices of the parents, the doctors, the people who are doing this. Researchers, talk to the people who actually do education, law and policy and implementation. Talk to people from the schools of ed who can kind of come in and help from an academic perspective. And other community members can be part of that. And get training for frontline staff. And be sure to do that and to be sure to recognize that there are laws out there. The Dignity for All Students Act, make sure that is something that's being implemented. Being transparent. There is much more data than there used to be available to folks to figure out what's going on. the freedom of information fight to get all the information took some time. So that kind of thing.
I was just going to say, it was always key to remember that that's not as simple.
That is not simple. Yeah. So there's attempts to dashboards to provide information. There's been some additions since we started talking with the school district, but it's still not enough. People do not know what's going on. And so those are some of the lists. What am I leaving out?
Yeah, no, I think everything you said is perfect. I think the one thing that the Syracuse AOD also implemented in there that I think would be very important for Buffalo is that they made the district assign staff members to overseeing these implementations and making sure that it was done with fidelity and that if somebody deviated or did not do it, that there was a consequence. And I think that, again, the most important thing we can do with this AOD is make sure that there are things in place, proper staff in place, proper accountability in place, so that building level principals are not just allowed to go off their own thoughts or own feelings about suspending the child. And so in the AOD, that piece right there where you have staff assigned, right, where your job is to make sure anytime a suspension comes up, anytime a child is up for suspension, that it's following the letter of the law is vitally important.
And just to take that then, okay, I mean, process being equal, being fair, all obviously vital parts of our democracy. I don't think I have to state that. Some might say, though, what about, have we seen improvement? Is it going to improve results? Are we going to see students do better, more go off to college, more be job ready?
Oh, I think that's what this is all about. At the end of the day, our investment is because we want better outcomes from students. You know what I'm saying? We ultimately want the district to achieve its mission of putting students and children and families first to ensure a high academic achievement for all, to have a restorative culture where we deal with the whole child, not putting the child out. I mean, not having children drop out. I mean, this is really about children reading, writing, doing math on grade level, graduating college and career ready. This is what all the effort is about. And so we feel like at this particular point, we've done as much as we can to try to do that without the legal lever of an AOD. And so it is going to continue to drag unless we have something with more teeth in it. Unfortunately, we've learned over time that the district is not inclined to do nothing that you don't make them do, that they're not required to do by law. And so we see, you know, a lot of union organizing around, you know, making sure you have the leverage that you can hold them accountable through collective bargaining and a contract. And so obviously an AOD is in effect a contract that says you have to comply with this or else. And so at this point, we feel like that will help us get to the place. And then once the culture changes, then obviously, you know, you don't need the AOD. You know what I'm saying? Because you have the culture change that you need that's focusing on the needs of every child. And hopefully that we'll see, you know, more students graduating, more students, you know, being able to go to college, more students reading, writing, and doing math on grade level.
We've got a new superintendent. We will have a new superintendent here for the school district. Is this an opportunity then to make these changes? Can a superintendent? We've seen a lot of superintendents in 15 years.
Yes.
Okay. So another one is coming in. Can this superintendent truly make a difference?
Yeah, I mean, and being real honest with you, I think this superintendent has made a difference. I mean, if you go to the superintendent before, when Dr. Cash was here, one of the things that Dr. Cash did to kind of throw parents off is he changed the suspension rate. Every district in the state, they have a suspension rate. Because Buffalo had the highest suspension rate in the state, Dr. Cash changed it on the dashboard from a suspension rate to an unsuspension rate. So instead of showing that he had, you know, a 13% suspension rate, he showed he had an 87% unsuspension rate. So my point is, this superintendent came and she was much more transparent and she, you know, worked with us, you know, much more effectively. But again, it's so much work that needs to be done and it's systemic. No one person can do it by himself. You know, it requires everybody buying in to a system of change, a culture of change. And so I think this new superintendent gives us a great opportunity. I think that this is an election year for the school board. I think new school board members give us another opportunity. But I think most importantly, actively engaged parents, you know, working with community partners is really what gives us the best opportunity. Because again, even for us to get here took 15 years, right? Mm-hmm. So we have to build on what the people before us did, and the people that's coming after us got to get the message and continue to build so that at one point we get to where we want to go as a school district.
Yeah, I'll add there. I think that what my father was saying is that Dr. Williams did a lot of good things that if the next superintendent adopts some of those was good. The main one was she was very collaborative with the community, which we did not see a lot of with Dr. Cash. But it also presents another opportunity that if this AOD is in place in time, this new superintendent comes in with that mandate already. They come in with the mandate of changing the culture, implementing different practices, and doing things differently than we have done before. So this is a huge opportunity to actually bring in a superintendent and possibly new school board members under a different culture and actually task them with playing it out, which is, I think, is a huge opportunity.
Well, there's so much here. This has been an enlightening conversation for sure. Like we said, we'll be posting those white papers, Dr. Connolly, up at our website. Folks can check that out for themselves. And obviously this issue, maybe it's coming to a head. Maybe we'll hear from the Attorney General, and maybe a new superintendent might make a huge difference here. Everybody's hopeful about that? You've been following this for a long time, Sam.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I am hopeful. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, I think, you know, I'm hopeful that by the new school year, that the Attorney General will partner with the school district and come up with a solution. I'm hoping that we all can stand together and say, this is what we're collectively going to work on to assure that these suspensions discontinue. And I'm confident, you know, and I love the team that's the coalition that has come together to dedicate their time and energy to making it happen, and I think it's going to result in a positive outcome.
Our guests have been from the Buffalo Solutions Not Suspensions Coalition, Professor Kim Diana Connolly of the University of Buffalo School of Law, also with us Emmanuel Radford, the Buffalo organizer for the NYCLU, and Sam Radford III. Thank you very much for bringing this to our attention, and best of luck moving forward here.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank
Appreciate the time.
Much.
This has been What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.